Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Six, seven.
I think Ben Simmons would be a great fit with the Warriors.
Yeah, but I'm thinking LaMelo now. I mean, that's maybe putting too fine a point on.
But is he going to walk on the court and be as good as Ben Simmons?
No.
Okay.
But
so then there
Ben
you go.
Simmons can't shoot, but he still finds ways to contribute,
to say the least. I think what you're going to see here is the draft on June 25th. And by the way, June 25th was a big draft for the Warriors. June 25th was actually the date of the draft the year that Stephen Curry was selected.
Oh, okay.
So that's a big big year if you're going to keep that pick.
I see. All right.
June 25th in Warriors history, that could be in essence the day that changed it all.
But you still want to trade the pick, right?
Yeah, I'm more inclined. And look, we can weigh in 888-957-9570. You can weigh in if you want to on it. Like. Do you keep the pick? Do you trade the pick? I am of the belief there are a lot of different options the Warriors will have in play, and there's going to be about this really 10-day, 11-day window from draft night until July 6th, where the Warriors, I think, are going to do about a 75% makeover of their roster. And
yeah,
I think the only people standing are going to be Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and probably Eric Paschal. And maybe, Kevon Looney, too. I think it's going to be those five.
Little Marquise Chris.
I think it's going to be those five, and I think you're going to have 10 new players.
Wow.
In over the span of June 25th to about July 6th. But the point is, I don't really think there's going to be a lot of change between now and then. And part of the reason why is
you need more information before you start making moves.
Exactly.
And that information just won't be available for a while.
And the information is, anything between how does D'Angelo Russell fit with Stephen Curry, which you might want to get a few games of that. It's what draft pick are you going to have.
Yeah.
It's not being hard capped anymore to where, you don't have to fit a specific amount of dollars in terms of what you're trading. You would have to trade essentially exact salaries. You get more flexibility when you're not a hard cap team. So, I think the Warriors are going to be dramatically different 7 months from today.
You know, the concept of load management, that is, okay, we've got this game, but we're going to rest our best player because that's more important than taking our best shot at winning this game, right? That's load management.
Sure.
In essence, are the Warriors almost load managing this season?
Yes, although I don't. There really is only one player they've load managed.
Yeah, I know, but I'm talking about the way they're approaching the whole season.
Yeah, they are, definitely. Again, there were some Warriors fans that didn't like when I said this in the summer, but I said, hey, this could wind up being a 16-month offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, all right, you're going to lose Kevin Durant. How do you adjust? Well, I was a fan of acquiring D'Angelo Russell. I thought, hey, that's a good move. Acquire D'Angelo Russell if for no other reason than he allows you to go trade for $27, $28 million of another player. And you would not be able to do that if you did not sign D'Angelo Russell. So bring in D'Angelo Russell. The other thought I had was, Stephen Curry, he's tended to get injured. If something happens to Stephen Curry, boy, there's a watchability factor to where you'd want to have somebody that can really score the basketball, especially knowing you're not going to have Klay Thompson. Well, here we are. Stephen Curry goes down. Now then D'Angelo Russell went down. But, I mean, could you imagine? And in reality, it hasn't actually been that bad, and the Warriors have been pretty competitive in the games where they haven't had D'Angelo Russell. In addition to other players being
out. I know, but they just lost to the Knicks and the Grizzlies at home.
Yeah, but point being, that's why you go get them. But to me, you go get them, and it's fine to say all the right things and hey, you want to get a look at how he could look? He's only 23. How would he look with Curry? How would he look with Curry and Clay? And those are things that logistically can't happen until April, in all likelihood, if you want to actually see a handful of games where the three of those guys are playing together. I get all of that. I get saying, hey, maybe he's a future piece. But to me, the reason you make the deal is because you have to. It just adds flexibility. So I was all for it while also noting, hey, there is some potential for the Warriors' season to completely get away from them if they're not healthy, which they haven't been. But you're also, at that point, afforded what could be a 16-month offseason to try and get right and be a really, really good team a year from now.
Let me see if you like any of these potential deals. Now, again, in no way am I suggesting that these are trades that have been discussed by the teams. These are things that reporters and the like have suggested, okay? And since the Knicks were just here, I looked up everything that's been written recently about a potential Warriors-Knicks trade. Again, this is just speculation. I am not suggesting that these are reports of actual talks. Going back to July, David Wurzberger, SNY, wrote, let's see here, a New York package would probably look something like Dennis Smith Jr., Marcus Morris, Wayne Ellington, and one or two first-round picks with some protections.
It got better after Dennis Smith.
I don't think the Warriors would get anything close to that much. Again, this was written in July, and this writer suggested Timberwolves went after him hard this summer.
See, I would so. Now Marcus Morris and Wayne Ellington would be useful. I mean, if
to me, you would stop right there. If you know,
Marcus Morris was great here, but then he wasn't so great last night in Sacramento.
No, but Marcus Morris is the kind of player, and look, San Antonio had him and then let him go. I mean, they could really use him. I mean, Marcus Morris is somebody the Warriors could really use on their roster.
All right, here's another one. All right, so you kind of like that one?
I mean, I like those two players. I wouldn't want anything to do with Dennis Smith, but hey, if you want to give two picks, that's cool too.
This is Zach Friedenlund of Complex. Proposed deal would send Russell to New York, and the Knicks could offer Dennis Smith Jr., Bobby Portis, and Reggie Bullock. You're going to pass? Alex is passing on
him. I kind of like Bobby Portis.
Okay. Boy, I would need a little more than that for D'Angelo Russell.
I would need now Bobby Portis makes, I think, a decent chunk of change, but I would want Marcus Morris in that deal.
DailyKnicks.com. I could see a package around Frank Ntilikina and Kevin Knox plus salaries to make the trade work.
No, that one doesn't do it for me at all.
No, I don't think so either.
Boy, the New York folks are really taking this seriously.
This has been talked about for a while, going back to the summer. Ian Begley, SNY.TV, he says December 15th, players who sign contracts as free agents can be moved. The Knicks are keeping an eye on potential moves that would improve the team. The Knicks, for a source, are keeping their eye on a lot of players. Russell could be one of those. We don't know that for a fact. It appears New York is looking to improve its roster for the long term. The Knicks aren't likely to trade any future first-round picks. Could also look to deal a player on a one-year deal like Marcus Morris or Wayne Ellington. Finally, fadeawayworld.net, trade package, Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina, Marcus Morris, two first-round picks for D'Angelo Russell.
Wow. I mean, I think
there's no freaking way the Warriors
could
get that.
If you could get two Knicks first-round picks for D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd almost do it just for that.
Right. That's why, for all the talk of, well, nothing's going to happen soon. Yeah, probably not. But if somebody were dumb enough to offer something like that, you'd have to jump on it.
I mean, two Knicks picks? Because, I mean, D'Angelo Russell could go to the Knicks, and they could still be a lottery team.
Yes.
Like, very easily still be a lottery team. Wow. I mean, I think the picks, that's going to be the interesting dynamic in this if the Warriors do wind up trading Russell, is would they actually get somebody's first-round pick back? I hadn't really thought. I tend to think more in terms of just tangible assets on the floor next year.
Think if you got the Knicks pick. And again, it's unlikely, but think if you got the Knicks pick next year. You'd be in pretty good shape next year for the draft.
Yeah, and I'm sure they wouldn't want to do that. But yeah, you'd be in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm.
With a couple of top
flight
picks.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean,
Well, then you start to get into the conversation about the pipe dream of all Warrior fans, which is, well, could you get Giannis?
No, because he's playing too well.
They've won 17 straight, and they're playing too well. I mean, that whole thing hinges on him having to tell the Bucks, I want out, and not only do I want out, but I want to go there specifically. And yeah, I think that's still a little bit of a pipe dream.
Mm-hmm. As great as Giannis is, MVP last year, what do you think he needs to do better? Where does he need to improve for that team to win a championship? He's got to be able to make outside shots, right?
When he's
in the playoffs and he's not getting to the rack. And he also has to become a better foul shooter.
And I think he's got to become a little better passer. I think he's got to be able to read, in essence, take what the defense is giving him and keep the ball moving.
That was stunning what happened to them
really
last year.
They stalled out against Toronto.
They were up 2-0, and then, wow, they went flat.
And essentially, they just had everybody ready for the drive.
Yeah.
And they were.
So I don't even know if I want Giannis. So you're not going to get him anyway.
All right, we're gonna have to stop the show at that point.
He can't shoot.
I think we're going to stop the show if that's where you're going with it.
But they're not
going to
get him
anyway. I mean, right now there's no need to go till 1 o'clock if we're going to go down that road. But, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what the Warriors do, not only at this deadline where they could. I mean, the Brian Windhorst report was a –
That was right after Steph got hurt. That's when he started. That's when he was saying that.
Yeah, and I still think, there's a little bit of a fine line between, and I've said this, if you trade a guy, do you have the belief you can get him back? If you traded Alec Burks, it's kind of like the baseball trade. If you're going to trade a guy, a lot of times teams
like
say,
Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, we're going to trade a guy. We're going to get him back. I mean, sometimes it doesn't really work that way totally. It doesn't seem like players are necessarily as cool with that as it may seem from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm just not sure I am that excited about Alec Burks. I know he played very well last night. He's having a nice bounce back season. And I could see how he could help me next year, but he's hardly a priority. I wouldn't be that worried about bringing him back next year.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you could get a second-round pick for him, you do it, I think. But again, we're still, six, 7 weeks away. I know there's a lot of different deadlines and the Marquise Chris guarantee deadline, and you want to open up a roster spot with, for Kai Bowman, who's right now down at Santa Cruz, and somebody that, it sounds like he's going to be down at Santa Cruz for a little while, and, until the Warriors can figure out, either need him or can figure out a means to add somebody to the roster, or subtract somebody, rather, from the roster to add him to the roster. Damian Lee's another one. I mean, Damian Lee's got more days than Kai Bowman does, but Damian Lee looks like a player that maybe the Warriors are going to want to try to keep
around.
He's becoming a shooter.
Yeah.
I mean, you can never have
too
much shooting.
Really well last night.
Never have too much shooting, and he's a really, really, really good shooter. So it's fascinating to me, and I would put Burks and Robinson, I've got this tier of, all right, you know the starting players that you're going to kind of want, and then there's this middle area that I think is to be determined by a handful of players that are not on the roster, kind of that middle third of the Warriors roster for next season. And then I've got the third, the bottom third. And in the bottom third, I'm willing to throw in guys. Burks could be a bottom third. Robinson could be a bottom third. I think Pascal's probably more of a middle third kind of a guy. Cauley Stein may by default be a bottom third because if he wants to be around, he's going to be around. Chris would be somebody in that category that the Warriors might want to look at. So, Kai Bowman would be another guy that I'd put in that bottom third of, could they move into the middle? Sure, but I think you still need to probably look to get better if you can for next year's squad.
It's so difficult, not only for the Warriors, but for any team, obviously, to anticipate what these players are going to be like next year, especially G League players. For example, last year the Warriors had Kendrick Nunn, right? And you look at what he's doing with Miami, and it's easy to go, oh my goodness, they blew that one. But if you look at how Kendrick Nunn played last year in the G League, he wasn't the same guy.
Yeah.
You had no way of knowing he was going to become this player. So, you know, you're trying to forecast guys like Smiley Geach and Damian Lee. Who knows? I mean, we didn't have any idea Kai Bowman was going to be this good. So it's really difficult. Obviously, it's difficult in the draft. It's difficult with these G League guys. Sometimes you're just guessing. Kendrick Nunn last year, I don't think anybody had any idea last year that he was going to be this good this year.
Yeah, and what, Miami swooped in on the last day of the season and gave him a contract. And, you know, they saw something clearly that they believed he could make a jump. And, boy, he's made a jump. And, yeah, in hindsight, you look at where the Warriors are now, you'd certainly want to have that guy around, and you don't have him.
Mm-hmm.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Connor Letourneau coming up about an hour from now. We're also going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the Warriors matchup tomorrow against the Sacramento Kings, as the Kings will be at Chase Center. The Warriors and the Kings playing for the first of four times. And it's going to be another year, Whitey, unfortunately, where both teams will not be good. We know that. Both teams will not be good. Right now the Kings kind of lingering in the mediocre realm, and the Warriors obviously have had things go completely off the rails.
Yeah, since the Kings moved to Sacramento from Kansas City, we've never had a season where both teams were very good teams. And so that's one reason why the rivalry is just kind of, it's been kind of simmering at best. There have been a few moments here or there, but it'd be nice if some year, maybe next year, both teams make the playoffs and collide. I know last year you talked about the great games that the Warriors and the Kings played. The games up there, you were probably there. I mean, as cliche, but you talk about playoff atmosphere last year.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, if we ever get a playoff series, it'll probably mean more up there than it does here, but it's going to be an incredible series. Maybe next year.
John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, it's Warriors This Week as we come to you live from Hooptopia here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason, Warriors This Week from Warriors Hooptopia out here at Thrive City at Chase Center. We're here until 1 o'clock. Let's get to our next guest. He does the pre- and post-game, some play-by-play for the Sacramento Kings, and also a host of a show on the Kings flagship station in Sacramento. Jason Ross joins us here on 95.7 The Game. Jason, thanks a lot for taking some time. We really appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing great. My question for you, John and Whitey, who's lobbing and who's dunking at Hooptopia? Who's the finisher? Who's the assist guy?
I think I'm going to lob and Whitey's going to dunk.
You know, Jay Ross, I'm the finisher. You know that. Yeah.
I am a completely unselfish player, and Whitey needs all the touches.
Yeah, he's thirsty. He's a high-usage guy.
Yes.
You know, and probably, you know, a big paycheck's coming his way, I'm sure.
Yes.
And Jason joins us via the Dialpad guest line here on 95.7 The Game. But, Jay, I don't know if you're coming out for this game tomorrow, but wow, if you were, you got to check out Hooptopia and everything around the new building here. I know Golden One Center is, what, in its fourth season now? Hard to believe. But, yeah, Chase Center is just spectacular. You got to get a chance to check it out.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but rave reviews, and obviously it's a shame with all the injuries they've had for the team not to be able to support what the building is going to provide. But over time, that's going to just be a gem there in San Francisco, and obviously they did an amazing job to build that. And like I said, I've heard nothing but rave reviews.
And you can see a little bit of Golden One Center in Chase Center. You know, it is different in many ways, but you know how certain ballparks influence others. You can see a little bit of Golden One Center sometimes when you just look out as far as the frame a little bit as far as Chase Center goes. Why I want to get into the four games last year were just amazing. Obviously, neither one of these two teams are where they want to be this year, although things have gone completely off the rails for the Warriors. I want to get just kind of your an outsider's perspective on the Warriors before we get into the Kings a little bit. Clearly, it's kind of the worst-case scenario for them, but what do you think about the way things have gone and maybe the way they're set up as somebody that covers another team on a day-in, day-out basis?
Yeah, this year is obviously an oddity because of all the injuries, and everything that is happening to them makes sense. I mean, it's not like it's a freak year in the sense that it doesn't add up. It does because of, first off, like everybody knows, not having Durant and then Clay being hurt, Steph being hurt, Draymond missing time, Russell missing time. There's just too much talent that's been gone. But hopefully for their sake, they can find some of the other pieces that they can feel they can go forward with, which what will eventually be the key pieces, and that's Clay, and that's Steph, and that's Draymond. And then inside of all that, if it works out where their record continues to go as it does, and they draft really well, well, maybe there is a little silver lining that this could be just a one-year blip, and then they're right back to a team to be reckoned with in the West. So everything that's happened makes sense. I'm sure they're not using it as an excuse, but I would. I mean, it all adds up as to why they've struggled.
Hey, Jay Ross, Whitey Gleason here, first time, long time. Willie Cauley-Stein, why ultimately would you say the Kings decided it was time to move on from him?
I think it came down to, Whitey, some guys absolutely love to play basketball, and I don't think Willie does. And it's not an indictment on – there's a lot of guys like that. I think Willie happens to be, you know, a gifted 7-foot guy that can do a lot of things, and obviously he gets paid quite well, even in the relative terms of the NBA, to do what he does. And I think if it wasn't such a high-paying and high-profile thing – I don't know that Willie would do it. He's got other interests, and other players have other interests. I just don't think he truly loves it to the point where if he wasn't paid that much or there wasn't the fame and fortune, that's the profession he would have chosen. So I think that's part of it. They gave him 4 years. I think he was looking for bigger money. Obviously, that didn't happen. And I think the frustration ultimately was a little bit of the inconsistency, not only in gameplay but in practice, and so they just felt it was time to move on.
Jason, we've talked a little bit during the show here about just how much fun the four head-to-head games last year between the Warriors and the Kings were. I mean, if you could have made that a four-game playoff series, I think the entire country would have been pretty entertained by it in the first round. Obviously, a little bit different, but what's going on with the Kings in the early going this year? I know they've had some injuries, but they've also played maybe better than expected considering those injuries.
Yeah, I think their season's been a little uneven, and naturally, same thing as the Warriors' injuries. Two key starters have been hurt. Marvin Bagley has just come back, but he had missed 7 weeks. De'Aaron Fox, honestly, when he got hurt, I thought the team wouldn't be able to function. I thought that injury would have totally derailed him. So a couple things have happened. I think they've learned how to play without him for the most part. They continue to play up to their competition and, unfortunately, down to their competition. But the bigger overlying theme for them, everybody that talks about the West, honestly, guys, I don't think the West is that good, or I can say that good, as good as everybody thought. So while the Kings have struggled and they were just floundering there a couple games below 500, you keep looking at the standings every day, and they're a couple games out of six. They're right there in seventh or eighth or ninth, and they've just been hanging around because, with the exception of maybe the Nuggets, the Lakers, the Clippers, and probably put Houston and maybe Utah and Dallas, kind of the way they've played up there, there's spots that are open because the Warriors, because the Blazers, because the Spurs, and the Kings are right in the mix despite all those things. And once they get Fox back, I think we're going to see the best part of this team.
Jay Ross, Luke Walton obviously had a ton of success here as an assistant. In what areas has he had the most impact with the Kings?
I would say the chemistry, and I know that it's hard to quantify. Every single player loves him. I mean, they absolutely love him. And it was interesting when they were 0-5 and the fan base was, you know, in a panic and really down on Coach. I think he helped keep the team, the locker room, all that together despite all the social media and fan noise. And then I think when they really start to play well and thrive, I think he looks really good. He's drawn up some pretty good late-game plays. Again, the players love him. I think his communication is very good amongst the team. And he's done a pretty good job of actually adjusting. I think the way the roster construction in the beginning of the season was Bagley and Dedmon, kind of this front court. Well, Bagley gets hurt. Dedmon, with the rest of the group, hasn't quite worked. So then they reboot, move him out, put Rashawn Holmes in, and restructure the offense, specifically when De'Aaron went out. So they've had to change the way they wanted to play and have, you know, been able to navigate that at a decent clip. And now hopefully once De'Aaron gets back, they can go back to what they were hoping to have with this team.
Yeah, Jason Ross joining us here on 95.7 The Game. It's Warriors this week, the Warriors and Kings tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game. Getting a little bit of what's going on with Sacramento. Yeah, I mean, the Kings have got to think they're in a real good spot, all things considered. And maybe, you know, the Warriors dropping out opens up a spot. San Antonio and Portland, which you mentioned, I mean, there are two spots available, and it doesn't look like it's going to, you know, take 40, maybe even 45 wins to get in. It might be low 40s or even maybe upper 30s the way it's looking right now. The big question that I wanted to ask you, though, is the Kings have been able to adjust without De'Aaron Fox. The one thing, and I think maybe the biggest thing for them moving forward, is do their actual young core pieces fit together properly? And I think there was a little bit of concern maybe about that in the early going. I know Bagley got hurt after the first game, but, you know, Fox is coming back, and the thought is they should make a jump, right? Is there some concern that maybe Fox and Heald and Bagley, those three don't function quite at the high level that maybe they were projected to when they were all put together?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question. I don't know that we know the answer yet. I think I would like to see a little bit of more time with them, because, you know, Bagley missed several different stints last year, so it's hard to get a full read on him, and he's missed 7 weeks this year, and he only played the one first game of the year with Fox. So I know what you're asking. I think it's a good question, because I don't know that it's been confirmed one way or the other. And to your first part, John, I think you're right that last year when the Kings were kind of in the race, they were on the fringe, they were on the bubble, and then they kind of fizzled at the end of the year. Well, the thought was, oh, if they get to 43, 44 wins, maybe they get in. Well, that bar ended up being 48. The Kings weren't a 48-win team. They couldn't have gotten there. They ended up being a 39, and they would have missed, even with some injuries late. Where this year, that lower part, it's 41, 42, 43, that's going to be a range, I think, for maybe even a 7 or 8, and I think that's very reachable, assuming everybody's healthy and they play well together.
Yeah, Jay Ross, we've talked about this a lot. JD and I agree with you. The West is just not nearly as formidable as it has been, nor as formidable as a lot of people thought it would be. As far as the Kings go, last year, obviously, one of the leaders in pace, but this year they're not pushing the ball up and down the floor as much. What would you say is the identity of this team right now?
I think that the thing that's been consistent, they really want to be a team that shoots the three and shoots a high volume of them, not Rockets-esque, but make that a dangerous part of their game. But it's interesting early on, Whitey, when they were struggling and Coach Walton was talking a lot about defense, a lot about more things that would provide true depth and to their foundation. I think last year that pace they played with, I don't want to say was gimmicky, but it was the best way for that team to win. And I think some teams just weren't ready for it. I remember Coach Clifford had talked about with Orlando that like this was the fastest pace team that he had ever seen. And so there was certain things that they had talked about last year opposing teams, where this year I think they're trying to have a little bit more substance to what they're doing. And naturally when Fox is out, the pace has slowed down. But I still think you want to fit his sweet spot when he's back healthy, take advantage of him running, take advantage of Marvin Bagley running. But if you don't have that, well, now you've got some other options. You can be a half-court team. You can be a defensive-oriented team. Not that they're the best defensive team, but they certainly have improved there. So I don't know that there's one thing I would say. I just think they're trying to become a more complete team that, if they were to make the playoffs, could maybe actually, you know, be a threat or do something of interest with a more balanced team.
Are they capable of playing fast and being good defensively? Because I think, you know, I know it's, you know, different system, and Luke Walton, you know, brought in part because he's to help the defense. But the Kings have been a much better defensive team since they lost Fox. And I'm not saying the two are necessarily correlated, because Fox is a pretty good defender. But how much of the pace and playing slower has helped their defense? Because it's actually been pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, I'd agree. I don't know that they can do both. Because I think once you start to do both, if you have pace and you're good defensively, Now you're talking about one of the best teams in the league, and they're certainly not that. So I think their best defenses that we've seen not only are slower, but it's Corey Joseph. Trevor Ariza has done a nice job for them defensively. And that's a group that doesn't run. I mean, they really don't that much with just those two on the floor. So I don't know that they can be both, but can they find a mix where you're still getting the strength of a pace team, but still finding the defense with a defensive team? So that's the challenge I think they've got going forward.
Hey, Jay Ross, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I want to ask you about Alec Burks. He's been a revelation this year. Last night, you know, returning to Utah again, he scored 24. He has really revived his career this year with the Warriors. Last year, 13 games only with the Kings after trade. He barely appeared. He played under 10 minutes a game. What happened to him last year? Was it just a matter of they brought in Harrison Barnes and they really had no role for him? He was hurt. What happened to Alec Burks last year in Sacramento?
That's a great question, too, Whitey, because I don't know. I like when they got him, I had seen his, you know, career, what he had done in other spots, and I thought, this is a nice, subtle little pickup. And I think his first game, he came off the bench, if I remember right, maybe hit three or four shots. I mean, I think he hit them all, and I thought, he's going to be a nice fit for this team. And then he just got lost in the rotation. I don't know if that was a coach preference or if they didn't like the way he was playing in practice. I have no idea, but I've seen several Warrior games, and he's been out there, and he's been at some nights their best player, and he's been really nice for what Golden State has been trying to do. So I don't really know the answer as to why his career arc should have shown that he should have been more of a contributor to the Kings, but unfortunately he just wasn't.
And if there's an identity for the Kings, would it be fair to say it's that they're going to be in every game, whether they're playing a good team or maybe another bad team, right? They're going to be in the game regardless.
Yeah, I think it's been five in a row that they've had basically decided either an overtime or one possession. Now, they've been on the right side of more of them. The struggle with that, they absolutely blew a game in San Antonio with a nine-point lead with about a minute and a half to go. So that's a game you've got to win. They didn't. Last night, they had a 16-point lead or 14-point lead on a not a very good Knicks team and lost to them at home down at the end. Now they had a miracle finish in Houston. They had a good finish against OKC. They beat a good Dallas team. So they really have played to the level of the competition, which on the nights where you're playing up, you know, that feels pretty good. But on the nights, they've had a couple of bad home losses to Charlotte, to Chicago, and to the Knicks. And, you know, at the end, when you count them all up, if they are short, certainly those are a couple games to look at. But they got to remember they snuck out a few where they probably beat teams I didn't think they could beat. So they're a little bit of a puzzle still. And with the unbalanced roster, until everybody's there, I think that's when we'll get the better read. But, yeah, I mean, I basically put tomorrow, you could probably put 2 minutes on the clock, a two-possession game, Kings and Warriors, and it'll come right down to the end.
Well, the Warriors have actually, it's been similar for them of late in terms of, you know, when they've played better teams.
But they don't end up on the right end as often.
They've been more competitive, but they've been awful in close games for the most part down the stretch as far as being able to execute. Jason, we really appreciate it. It's going to be a unique point of view, I think, for the Warriors side of this thing tomorrow. They're the underdogs in this one, and they're probably going to be at least the first three times that these two teams meet.
And J-Ross, you watch the Warriors. I'm sure you know this. Marquise Chris has been incredible this year. Had a big game last night. He's been a lot of fun to watch. Maybe a little bit of a revenge game for him tomorrow.
I feel like the Kings have a lot of people with revenge games on their mind. That list is pretty long.
Yes. Jason, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it.
All right, thank you, guys. And I still want to see the one-on-one game, but, John, be careful because Whitey will get into the paint. He'll plant his feet. And remember, shoulder to the chest, defense at its best. Offensive charge, we're going the other way.
Hey, Jason, we don't play like that out here.
All right, yeah, that's right. Keep it clean, guys.
See you, Jason.
Take it easy.
All right, Jason Ross joining us here on 95.7 The Game. We appreciate that. There was, at one point in time, I think, a pickup game that we all played in together.
I'm sure there were a few.
There was a good little stretch there, maybe a decade or so ago.
Jay Ross, good player, steady
player. Yeah, good player, steady.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody did try to maybe body up a little bit in one of those, and my reaction to that may have led to somebody saying, hey, we don't play like that out here.
Jay Ross, kind of a Harrison Barnes-esque type player, maybe a little better shooter, but I think that that might be my NBA comp for Jay Ross, Harrison Barnes.
Okay. All right. Mine may be Bobby Portis.
Okay. For you or for him?
No, for me.
For you. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know, playing along, playing along, playing along, and then Oh, whoa, 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 they're going at it on the baseline, what?
Really interesting to me what he said about Willie Cauley-Stein, and of course we've heard that, and if you've followed Willie Cauley-Stein, you know that he's just he's a really interesting player, and it's not so much that he doesn't try. The criticism of him has been not sure he really cares that much. And my feeling with Willie Cauley-Stein, having watched him for years, is he you just got to accept him for what he is. He's never going to be a guy who brings a lot of intensity. He can help you. He's going to be inconsistent. There's going to be nights when Willie Cauley-Stein is really barely there. But if that's part of the deal, if he's on your team, you just got to accept that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of the Warriors being willing to accept it, I think, was the fact that he was supposed to be playing with a higher level of talent around him.
Yeah, and
I think he thought that. Yeah. I've said that at a couple of different points where, you know, I think he thought, you know, maybe he was getting a little bit of an unfair rep with the Kings, and he's thinking, hey, I'm going to go to the Warriors, and I'm going to be playing with Steph, and I'm going to be playing with Draymond, and I'm going to be playing eventually with Clay, and D'Angelo Russell, and I'm going to look good in this thing.
Right.
You know, I didn't get paid, but I'm going to look good, and it's going to look like they made another mistake, right? One of a lot of different mistakes that maybe that franchise has made over the last decade plus. Hadn't really worked out that way because he's not, you know, he's playing on a less talented team than he was last year. Even.
Last night, 106-104. Willie Cauley-Stein with the dunk to tie it. Nope. Hits the back iron.
Swing play of the game.
Utah goes down and bangs in a three, so it's 109-104 instead of tied. Do you think the Warriors would have won that game if he makes that shot?
It would have been tough still.
I agree.
It would have been tough still. I mean, there's it just the Warriors are just in a real tough spot right now because it feels like any good team. And the Jazz are a good team. Now, they may be a disappointing team, but they're a 15-11 team, and that's a team that's going to win. In a bad year, they're still going to probably win 46 or 47 games. Any good team right now, it feels like if they're within 10, let's say, in the final 5 minutes, they can just take it from the Warriors if they
right.
want to.
Right. The Warriors have such a small margin for error that if you miss a dunk when you have a chance to tie, okay, you're probably going to lose the game. You just can't afford any missteps.
And if you look through just the teams that the Warriors have beaten, they've beaten Chicago twice out of their five, right? And the Bulls are 9-18. They have beaten the Pelicans and the Grizzlies, and those two teams are right there at the bottom of the Western Conference above the Warriors, and they beat Portland, and remember, they beat Portland. Portland actually, at that point, I think was maybe 500, maybe 3-3. It was in the early going of the year.
That was
they
one
beat
of our
Portland,
first indications
and
that
we
Portland
were like, boy, that was odd, and Portland now is, you know, they're the only team in between New Orleans and Memphis other than to get to Portland is San Antonio, who's struggling mightily. So you start to look around, and the Warriors, you know, they aren't capable of beating a good team right now. And in fact, you know, you look at tomorrow, they beat, you know, Sacramento would be, if they were to beat Sacramento, I'm not saying they will, but if they were to beat Sacramento, it'd be their best win of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kings are 11-14.
But Steve Kerr says the wins are coming. He said last night, we're going to start winning games here.
And why do you think that?
Why do I think he said it?
Yeah, why do you think he said it, and do you think it is going to happen?
I don't know that it's going to happen, but obviously as a coach, he's got to stay positive, and they're working towards improving.
Because he said something similar a couple of weeks ago. He said something similar a couple of weeks ago, and it led to what I think has been the most disappointing stretch of play that the Warriors have had. I think if you go back to the Atlanta game, the Charlotte game on the road, Atlanta, Charlotte, Chicago, and then the Memphis and Knicks games. Those five games as a whole, and I know the Warriors did win one of them, but those five games as a whole, I think, are the most disappointing five games of the season.
As a coach, he's got to reinforce the lessons he's teaching, and when a team goes into Utah and nearly wins, especially after they played so poorly at home, he's got to stress the positive. The wins are coming. It's coming together. Marquese Chriss last night at halftime, we're sick of losing. So, you know, what else is the coach going to say?
Yeah, and I've really liked the edge that he's brought. He's got a little of the. He's got a little of that. We don't play like that out here.
Yeah,
kind of
so
attitude.
Does, so does
to
Rashawn
him.
Holmes, who the Warriors will face tomorrow.
No doubt, and that was the one thing. Rashawn Holmes actually been. I mean, you think about the Sacramento. You know, Corey Joseph and Bielitsa and Bogdanovich and Rashawn Holmes. I mean, those are the players that have basically, along with Buddy Hield, who's hit a couple of big shots for him. Those are the. Those players have been the ones that have saved the Kings from being where the Grizzlies or the Pelicans are right now. I mean, they really could be. They could be a team that's 10 under 500 and kind of buried even in today's NBA, where the 7 and the 8 seed are possibly under 500 teams in the Western Conference.
So you think a win tomorrow would be the Warriors' win of the year?
Yes, it would. Huh. Without a doubt.
To me, road wins are still a little more impressive.
Just by record, it would be.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I it wouldn't even be close. I mean, look at their other wins. 9-18 Chicago. Memphis 8-17. The Pelicans are 6-20.
Mm-hmm. But they weren't when they played them.
Yeah, but again, you know, neither was Portland.
Right.
I mean, Portland was a 500 team when the Warriors beat them. I mean, that would be, wow, that was a pretty good win. That win doesn't look so good right now. But no, tomorrow would be the Warriors' best win of the year.
All right.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Connor Letourneau at 12:30. More of your phone calls, 3 hours down, 1 hour in the books, coming up here at 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
Final hour to John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason here at Hooptopia at Thrive City at Chase Center.
Mm-hmm.
We got more and more filing through here. Looks like a lot of youngsters going through the splash zone right now, making their way over to, what did you call it?
The Dunkatorium?
Dunkatorium.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's what they call it yet. I'm sure they will call it that.
Yeah, the Dunkatorium here. Warriors Hooptopia open at Thrive City. Tickets available at thehooptopia.com if you want to find out what the heck this is all about. And it is just fantastic.
Yeah, because you go on a tour, so that's why they ask you you got to go to thehooptopia.com. Tickets available there for a limited time.
There's a certain order that you go through everything.
Right.
Takes you through
an NBA
combine,
career simulation.
Yeah,
yes.
It takes you through an NBA career.
Mm-hmm.
From
combine
to draft.
Draft night with the commissioner. Flight to the Bay Area, and then your NBA career, dunking and even winning championships and celebrating championships. And they have a simulation of the Warriors' new locker room.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly cool in its own right.
Yes. They've thought of just about everything here in putting this together. First of its kind, only of its kind, Hooptopia.
And we're here until 1 o'clock. So, yeah, the Hooptopia. .com if you want tickets to check that out. By the way, Connor Letourneau is going to join us coming up at 12:30. We're trying to make sense of NBA trade deadline season as it officially tips off tomorrow, with players that were signed to contracts able to be traded starting tomorrow, December the 15th. We're also trying to make sense of why the shorthanded Warriors have been more competitive against better teams than the full-strength Warriors. And I say full-strength, obviously Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson being out. But they had everybody against the Knicks except Curry and Thompson.
I think it's matchups.
And,
I don't know.
And they were awful against the Knicks.
Yeah.
Wound up making the game close because the Knicks are the Knicks. But it just felt like the Knicks weren't going to lose that game that night if they did things that they needed to do, which was just a kind of a paralyzing thought in this year, as lost as it's become for the Warriors in terms of the one loss record.
Well, you know, the Knicks haven't lost a game since they came in.
No, they have not. They have not. And they did beat the Kings, who the Warriors play tomorrow.
Right.
And, you know, that's a tough one for the Kings. And, yeah, the Kings lately have been better against better teams. For whatever reason.
They won at Houston. They won at Dallas.
Yeah. They won it better. Yeah. And, yeah, exactly. They beat Denver within the last couple of weeks. But they've also lost to Chicago and the Knicks in the last couple of weeks as well. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to suggest it's possible that there's just more parity this year in the NBA than there's been. So that
mediocrity, but
a lot of these games. Yeah. There have been a lot of games that make you go, wow, how does that happen? And sometimes it's a matter of we just maybe overestimate how good the better teams are and undervalue how, you know, overestimate how bad the lesser teams are when really everybody's more closer to a muddled middle.
Well, and you just look at, I mean, San Antonio and, you know, San Antonio and Cleveland the other night, right? San Antonio and Cleveland, you know, the Spurs lost to Cleveland at home.
Yeah.
The Spurs have lost to Memphis
mm-hmm.
at home this season. Phoenix had been playing pretty well. They're thinking, hey, they got a shot to maybe make a little bit of a run. Well, Phoenix is in a spot where they lose at home to Memphis.
Right.
They're really...
And the Warriors nearly pulled one off last night.
And the Warriors nearly pulled one. And last night would have been legitimately the best one of the year.
Yeah. As far as the deadline, Drew Schiller wrote an interesting piece. Maybe you've seen it at NBCSportsBayArea.com. And he also quotes John Hollinger of The Athletic. John Hollinger writing, while the Warriors have cash pouring in from the Chase Center, people who are making money still like to make more money. So if the Warriors use the Iguodala exception and their taxpayer mid-level exception and add a first-round pick near the top of the draft, the payroll next season would reach $175 million or more, which would trigger a gigantic luxury tax bill of $108 million. The repeater tax would add $34 million on top of that. So Drew Schiller points out, it would make perfect sense if Bob Myers is able to execute some trades before the February 7th deadline that puts the Warriors closer to the tax threshold. They're about $6 million above or completely under.
Yeah.
There's more motivation for the Warriors to make moves.
And that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense because there really is no sense in spending top dollar or doing things that would force you to have to spend more money in future years where you could use that money solely on winning and maybe winning at a championship level. So in essence, saving up for, you know, a day where
yes.
you really can make it count.
Here's how Hollinger puts it. The Warriors have a major financial incentive to get below the tax line because of their likely payroll strategy for next season.
Yeah, which is go get it.
And the non-existent stakes remaining in the current one. Keep an eye on them as we get closer to February.
And that would be, again, you'd start to think about players like Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III,
Willie Cauley-Stein.
Or maybe all of them.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because that's the kind of, those would be the kind of moves that would need to be made. And maybe it winds up being those three go away and Kai Bowman and Damian Lee have contracts for the remainder of the year.
I think it's an important point to make because I know many fans know exactly what's going on, but we've heard from a fan or two wondering why, hey, they're getting all this money this year with the new arena. Why aren't they spending more money on the payroll?
Well,
it's a matter of cutting payroll so that they can spend more in the future.
You're going to spend more down the line when spending more means winning more.
Yes, exactly.
So it's not exactly. It's all
not money.
It's a matter of efficiency.
Yeah.
It's all a matter of, hey, do you want to spend do you want to spend $6 million this year that will lead you to having to spend $30 million more next year and then a lot more in years to come when you want to go find players that could maybe put you over the top to win a championship again? So it makes a lot of financial sense if the Warriors were to trim there. I wouldn't have any problem with that. Hey, did you see Kai Bowman?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.